Hello and welcome to Keyframe, part of the Geek Show podcast network, or podcast family, like we want to call it. My name is Mark, and with me, as always, is Tookie.
Hello.
And Rob.
Hello.
Oh, I've been out-smoothed already.
Exactly.
Now, it's a slightly special podcast we've got today, isn't it?
It's our 100th episode, and that is official. We are officially 100 episodes old. And like anybody who's reached a century, we totally forgot our birthday.
Don't think we'd be getting a card from the Queen.
Well, I've only been here for 30 episodes, so.
See, he's just hit 30, Tookie. He's not been here for the. I am officially the foggy of the podcast since I have been here for all 100.
Oh, so we went through some trials and tribulations and survived many, many things, possibly.
Yeah. It sounds like it's been an ordeal. It's not. We've been sitting doing things we enjoy talking about it. It's been fun as out, man.
Yeah.
Trials and tribulations, my backside.
Trials and tribulations. No.
We did Neo Yorkio.
Yeah, well, Tookie. It's part and parcel of what we are into.
Yeah, but Tookie, you joined us late. You weren't here, man. You weren't here for the great anime war of June 2015.
It was horrible. People died.
It was horrible. It was horrible. It was so hot that day. The flesh was melting off people's cosplay.
Oh, mine's just SunnyCon last year. This year, even. Hey, Jesus Christ, we're not even in the new year yet. I'm forgetting it.
So, yeah.
Time flies, man. Time flies.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, we've got all sorts to talk about. We're going to kick off with the Annie Award nominations. It's the 45th Annie Awards coming up soon. And the nominations are out for the Annie Awards. We're not going to run through all of them, but we do want to pick up the Best Animated Feature and Best Animated Feature Independent, because we noticed something that kind of annoyed us. So, the nominees for Best Animated Feature are Captain Underpants, the first epic movie, Cars 3, Coco, Despicable Me 3, and The Boss Baby. And only one of those deserves to be on that list, which is Coco.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about Coco. Unfortunately, it's not out till next year for us, so.
Well, let's put it this way. Cars 3, nah. Despicable Me 3 was called a travesty. The Boss Baby was basically all about poo jokes. And Captain Underpants? Really?
Mm. That's the one about the guy who's hanging around with kids in his underwear, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. Now, is it me or is it obvious which one of these is going to win?
I don't know. Let's have a look at the sponsors and see who's given the most money.
Well, let's have a look who's made them. DreamWorks, Captain Underpants. Pixar, Cars 3, Pixar, Coco, Illumination, Despicable Me 3, DreamWorks, The Boss Baby. And then you look at the sponsors and you have Amazon Prime, Nickelodeon, DreamWorks, Pixar, Walt Disney Company, Disney Toon, Cartoon Network, Illumination, Sheridan, Warner Brothers, Sony Pictures Animation, Marvel Pixar, Blue Sky, The Animation Guild. These are the sponsors of the Annie Awards, so this is the main reason why we're annoyed, because on the independent, the best animated feature independent category, you have In This Corner of the World, produced by Taramaki, Genko Limited, and Masao Maruyama, Mappa Company Limited, Loving Vincent, which is Breakthrough Films Production Company, and various others, Napping Princess, which is produced by Nippon TV, The Big Bad Fox and Other Tales, which is produced by Folivari, Panic, and Studio Canal. The Breadwinner, which is Cartoon Saloon, Aircraft Pictures, and Melusine Productions. None of those studios, none of those production companies sponsor the Annie Awards. Ergo, they must be independent, so.
Well, independent of America, I suppose.
Lots of places are independent of America. Jerusalem, for example, is independent of America.
Yeah.
That was a
still stick the nose in.
That was a current affairs joke, by the way.
But it's like trying to suck yourself off with these awards. Like,
it is a lesson in ego stroking, isn't it?
The thing is, it's like best animated feature, and on the independent list, there's about three or four of them, which should be on the best animated feature.
Yeah.
Because I've been to see all bar Captain Underpants and Coco. And I'll tell you something, Cars 3 is just your usual cookie cutter, like, it's mainstream bollocks. It's like, ooh, so he was a racer, then he was a secret agent, then he's kind of a racer / coach. You know, Ben Stiller's terrible as a voice actor.
Basically, it's Cars 3 is trying to do Rocky Balboa moving on to Creed. That's basically what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
But from the independent ones, the ones that should be on the list for the actual nominations, and I understand this is all corporate sponsorship stuff, but Annie Awards, stop being so bloody corporate. People look at the awards for various things, like the Oscars and BAFTAs and stuff like that, and they're all so corporate now, and you can't trust them. It's that simple. People are more knowledgeable now because of the internet. People are more knowledgeable and more aware of these things. We know that these awards ultimately don't matter. It's just a big advertising campaign for these things that are in the limelight. So instead of calling something independent, especially when it's from Japan, where animation is a national industry, and some of the companies involved in some of these things, Nippon TV, for example, is a major company in Japan. It's not independent in the slightest. MAPPA is not independent. You know, Genko is not independent. Studio Canal definitely isn't independent.
Should just split them instead of like best feature and feature independent, just have us foreigners.
Yeah. At least the Oscars have still have the audacity of doing that.
Yep.
If you're going to flaunt how much money the companies that sponsor you have, just, you know, wear your heart on your sleeve. Just say, this is the award for the companies that pay us our wages. This is the award for the companies that don't.
Is it not the fact that the actual sponsors like run this? Because I've seen the way like awards go, this is like low scale awards like Sunland Echo or The Chronicle and whatnot, like, you know, local like businesses in the UK, and their award ceremonies, it's basically they get people nominated and the income they make from selling the tables for food. Like, they'll give you about 15 quid's worth of a free course meal, but they'll try and charge you £100 per head. And every company usually brings like 10 people along to these kind of things.
Yeah.
And it is a money making scheme. Admittedly, after winning like awards myself and not having to like fork out hundreds because only me and Donna went because we only got 2 free tickets, it kind of worked for us. But it is a marketing ploy. And it's kind of disheartening to see the likes of Despicable Me 3 even being put up for anything.
No,
because the animation these days, you should be championing and actually shining a spotlight on the things that are doing good, not the things that pay you money.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, capitalism! Yay, capitalism! You know? So anyway, the independent nominations, the nominations for the best animated feature film that doesn't pay the wages of people working at the Annie Awards. I used to have a little bit of respect for the Annie Awards, but not anymore. In This Corner of the World, as I said, Loving Vincent, Napping Princess, The Big Bad Fox and Other Tales, and The Breadwinner. And you know what? If you replaced Napping Princess with Coco, I would say that then you would have your best animated feature nominees right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit of kick in the bollocks as well, because like movies like Love and Vincent and that, they've done so much more work than like Despicable Me 3. They've already had like the models made from Minions and whatnot for ages. So they're just rehashing like old software and putting it into CG. Loving Vincent, like every individual frame has been hand painted painstakingly by like a group in Poland. And it's like that much effort versus like phoning it in for like a payday.
Yeah.
It's angering, really angering. Like,
so anyway, anything else we've got interesting to talk about before we move on to what we should be talking about?
Nope.
Nobody has anything interesting.
it's Christmas. It's quite quiet. It's very quiet over Christmas.
Yeah, this is true. As Tucky said, it is the Christmas period. And so, obviously, it's quiet. And we could have talked about Christmas cartoons and anime and stuff like that this week. But it's our last show of the year next week. So we're going to do that for our Christmas episode. We haven't forgotten that one. We forgot our 100th birthday. We didn't forget priorities.
This is more important than 100.
Yeah, Christmas is more important than 100. Because that's Santa, man. Santa, man. I make him sound like a superhero.
I've seen the Battle of the Gods game.
Yeah.
And they've introduced Santa into it. It's Santa versus Jesus.
Oh, God. It's the fight of the century. Yeah.
See, when you said Battle of the Gods, I thought you meant Dragon Ball Z. And I was like, what the hell's Dragon Ball Z?
No.
Like, what's Santa fighting Goku for?
Nah. The whole Santa versus Jesus thing was South Park first, though.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, we've got some stuff to talk about. So, how do I start this off? I have undefeated Bahamut Chronicle. No, sorry, no. Let me do that again. I have undefeated Bahamut Chronicle. The Japanese title is Saijaku Muhai no Bahamut. And it's actually based on the light novel series written by Senri Akatsuki with illustrations by Ayumu Kasuga. The story is basically that Lux, a former prince of an empire named Arcadia that was overthrown via a rebellion 5 years earlier, he is now going off to meet an old friend of his at an academy, but as he's traveling across the rooftops trying to get something that was stolen from a girl by a cat, he steps on the wrong roof tile and accidentally trespasses in the female dormitory's bathing area, where he sees the kingdom's new princess, Lysishart, naked.
Yeah.
And incurs her wrath. Yeah. She then challenges Lux to a drag ride duel. Drag rides being an ancient armored mechanical weapon that have been excavated from ruins all around the world. Lux used to be called the strongest drag knight, but now he's known as the weakest undefeated, because he will absolutely not attack in battle. After his duel with Lysishart, Lux ends up attending the female-only academy that trains royals to be drag knights, and the reason why he's attending is because, apparently, because of the rebellion, lots of male drag knights got killed, so there aren't that many of them left. It's not that they can't pilot them, it's just that most of them died. Because someone thought rebellion. What a great
idea. Sounds
a
lot like Infinite Stratos.
It's not like Infinite Stratos at all. I will have you know, it's nothing like Infinite Stratos at all. It's not one guy in an academy full of women, and you have mechs that they have to wear, and they have to fight against these strange creatures, and, you know, the lead girl falls in love with this other guy, and then he has a harem of other girls who also are pilots, and they all have to defend the world together. It's nothing like Infinite Stratos at all.
Oh, sounds like every harem series.
No. It sounds like every Infinite Stratos type harem series. And do you know why it sounds like that? Because it is. It's exactly like every other Infinite Stratos harem type series. Except for one. No. I tell a lie. No, it is exactly like Infinite Stratos. Because his sister is at the academy as well. But this time she's not an instructor. This time she's his younger sister. Because obviously, you know, younger sister. So, you have a selection of characters. They are fairly bland, fairly generic. Lux Arcadia is, for someone who is supposed to have been raised as a prince and actually makes an oath not to attack with these weapons of mass destruction that these children are piloting, because they are weapons of mass destruction and they're being given to children to pilot.
Seems very safe.
Yes, seems very safe indeed. Especially when children are notorious for not really having much in the way of self-control, as is evidenced by the very first duel in the very first episode between Lux and Lysishart, however you pronounce her bloody name. Because she obviously has no self-control, because he saw her naked, and so she wants to basically break him in half, and he's not attacking, so she thinks, oh, he's looking down on me, yada yada yada, things got out of control. She breaks a barrier with one of her powerful attacks, and so creatures from outside can fly in and attack the students. See what I mean about lack of self-control?
You should really learn to control it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, in a world where adults are real, why would you send children off to fight?
Especially in a landscape of war as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at what happened in real life with the world wars. Children were immediately sent to the safest place possible.
Yeah. But this is the thing that always puzzles me about these shows. I mean, at least with Infinite Stratos, they basically said, no, we've done away with war. It's now just fights between these, right? At least Infinite Stratos went and said that, which meant you could go, okay, right, fine. So they don't have to fight in wars. Okay, it makes it a little bit easier to swallow the pill. But this one, the pill is just going to get stuck in your throat. And unless someone runs up to you and does like an anime Heimlich, you're just going to choke on it.
Are you sure it's not a suppository?
Yes, I'm sure it's not a suppository, because while I was watching this, I honestly did not taste like shit.
Do you know what's really bad about this? Is the title of the series as well. I mean, we just talked about Rage of Bahamut a few weeks ago.
The title, you mean? You mean Undefeated Bahamut Chronicle? You can't say it any other way. You have to say it like that, because you've got to make it sound more epic than it actually is.
I just felt it was quite, like, I don't know, misleading. It's like...
Of course it's misleading.
The untrained eye, they could think it's related to Rage of Bahamut.
No. To the untrained eye, yeah, you could think it's related to Rage of Bahamut. But also, you could think, oh, that sounds good. Undefeated Bahamut Chronicle, that sounds like a really good show. It's like Infinite Stratos. Nowhere in Infinite Stratos was anything infinite, because the show actually did come to an end. And I do not recall where Stratos fit into it. Was Stratos the name of the mech things that they had to wear?
I think, yeah, the Infinite Stratos was the actual name of the mech legs.
The mech legs
or
were called...
Or whatever it was.
They were called Infinite Stratos, were they?
Yeah.
What a weird name.
No, it is a weird name, because it's like one step away from Strike Witches and Sky Girls. Think about it.
I don't want to think about Strike Witches.
Undefeated Bahamut Chronicle! This is based on the manga adaptation of the light novel. The manga adaptation was done by Itsuki Watanabe. If you're into your mech-based high school harem romantic comedy type things with action and stuff like that, then fine, go for your life, you know? If you're a fan of Infinite Stratos and you want more like Infinite Stratos, then this is right up your street. And the animation quality is decent enough. The character designs are generic as hell. The one thing that got me about the story was the fact of the aspect of Lux's older brother, who for some reason was a major player in the rebellion against his own family. And I'm thinking, what's going on? Please answer questions. Why aren't you answering questions? Why won't anybody talk to me and answer my bloody questions? You know, the music is decent enough. The voice acting is fine for what it is. But there are occasions, and this is going to make you laugh, right? The thing about these types of show is that you can always tell when somebody doesn't want to be there. And even though there is no English dub with this, it's Japanese all the way with English subtitles, because this is an MVM release, and I applaud MVM for releasing stuff with just the original dub and subtitles. In this day and age, it takes balls to keep doing that. The problem with that is that it's kind of difficult to tell when a Japanese voice actor, if you don't speak Japanese, it's kind of difficult to tell when a Japanese voice actor really isn't into the role, right? Which, if you're interested in knowing what that sounds like, then you should watch Undefeated Bahamut Chronicle.
Poor guys. They must be sitting there thinking, I'm voicing this, I could be voicing hentai instead.
No, it's not even that. It's like, it's sometimes on this, where you have the characters talking, it feels like they're actually just listing stuff that they're going to buy from the shops. Or it feels a bit like, you know, Final Score on BBC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It feels a bit like that at times.
The final pools panel results.
You know, it just feels a bit like Liverpool 1, Manchester United 1, Middlesbrough 0, Sunderland lose.
They didn't score, but we're still lost somehow.
Yeah. It feels a bit like that. It feels a bit like they're just going through the motions. And it's worse when you have, you know, the female character who's supposed to be the kind of, was it Yuki from Haruhi Suzumiya, you know, that type character, where they keep speaking the monotone voice and they seem disinterested in everything.
Yeah.
That character in particular sounds exactly like she's just reading from a shopping list.
Isn't that more accurate, though?
Not quite, because they've got to have this certain element of being in the series. In this case, and there are plenty of times when you'll hear this, it sounds like she's not even invested in the series. She's just there for the paycheck. Undefeated Bahamut Chronicle. It's not a good series.
It doesn't sound it.
It's not. It's an Infinite Stratos clone. This is the problem with all of these clones. Infinite Stratos came out, and then other things that copied it that were either already around or came out afterwards, they started coming out because Infinite Stratos was popular and sold a lot of merchandise. And so they thought, we can sell merchandise for this sort of thing as well.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the world is changing and it doesn't work like that anymore. It still works like that in certain parts, but people are getting wise to this stuff. So
yeah, we've seen a few series now, like even this season, we've seen a few series that's kind of popped up, being like, well, Yuri Ice was popular, we're going to do it too. Oh, yeah. Man, nobody cares.
Free was popular, let's do Dive.
Oh, don't remind us of Dive. Oh, moving swiftly on from Dives. I've had a fun time because I've rewatched one of my favourite anime films, Paprika.
You do realise that Tucky and I aren't letting you do this by yourself?
That's good, because no matter how many times I watch it, I can't explain what is going on.
Okay, I want to get one thing out of the way before we get into this properly. Satoshi Kon was a master at several things, but one of the things that he was an absolute genius at, and I think he was probably one of the best in the world ever at this, was editing, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because Paprika, and in fact all of Satoshi Kon's works, but Paprika in particular, is a lesson in how to edit. It literally is a lesson in how to do video editing. It's a lesson in how to be artistic and imaginative with it. It highlights that editing is as much an art form as directing.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so beautifully edited, really. It's a... I would say more or less everything about the film's beautiful, but the way they have scenes transition from one to another in this film is just fantastic. It makes it look even more weird and wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, that whole bit where she's eating the burger and then she goes out. Various things when it comes to editing, they have names. You'll have wipes, you'll have transitions, you'll have... various things like that, you know, you'll have all sorts of names for these things. But I was looking at trying to find, what did you call that kind of transition? And you know what? It doesn't actually have a name because Kon just made it up. Satoshi Kon just literally made up that bit where she comes out of the fast food joint, the two guys are following her, and the guy with the t-shirt is walking past. She goes behind the guy with the t-shirt so you don't see her, but then she disappears. And then you see that she's on the t-shirt and the camera goes straight into the t-shirt. So you're with her again. What do you call that transition? I don't know.
That is the Satoshi Kon transition.
The I don't know transition. So it could be anything.
Oh, I mean, but even just focusing on that early, like, opening scene like that, there's so many, like, where the two guys just prior talking to her. And then you can just see in all the reflections how it's just kind of like being, oh, yes, yes. And then just like, yeah.
Oh, the different reactions, yeah.
Yeah. It's really unique. And a lot of the stuff that's in the film is stuff that you don't see anywhere else.
Yeah. And the sad thing is, the closest that I've seen to Satoshi Kon, I said this, was it last week or the week before?
It would have been last week.
Yeah. I said this last week. The closest we've seen to Satoshi Kon's skills is Masaki Yuasa. Because everyone talks about the next Hayao Miyazaki, don't they?
Yeah.
But for me, for anime, for animation, and for animated movies to be taken seriously, I think we should be waiting for the next Satoshi Kon.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely someone who unfortunately passed away well before his time.
Yeah. But anyway, we're talking about Paprika, and it's one of my favourite films, so go, Mark.
Well, what more can we say about it? Well, there's plenty. I'm not going to delve too much on the plot, because the plot is absolute bananas.
It's Fruit Loops. It's Fruit Loops.
It's Fruit Loops with magic mushrooms as milk.
Milky magic mushrooms.
It is. It was one of them ones that it inspired like films like Inception. And when Inception came out, like, oh, it's a dream within a dream within a dream. I was like, yeah, I've seen that before. Yeah.
Do you know what the hilarious thing is? Christopher Nolan spent ages saying that Inception was a totally original work, even though people were pointing out the similarities between Paprika and Inception. And then Satoshi Kon died, and he turned around and said, yeah, I was inspired by Paprika.
Yeah, kind of nicked the idea.
Well, it wasn't just him. I mean, Darren Aronofsky has been inspired by Satoshi Kon's work as well, amongst others. Hell, even the Wachowskis have been inspired by Satoshi Kon's stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the whole film is inspirational. Especially if you're a fan of animation, it's like one of those films that's just like, yeah, this is one of the ones, the must see ones.
Yeah.
It's just completely unlike anything else that you can sit down and watch, even compared to stuff like Perfect Blue or Tokyo Godfathers, his other work.
I don't know. There are a couple of things that you could watch that are just as trippy as Paprika. Mind Game by Masaaki Yuasa, for example.
Oh, yeah, there is that one. But honestly, this film is just... I can watch it so many times and always find something new in it. Even if something new has seen something in that... carnival that you didn't see before.
Oh god, yes, the carnival.
Because we can't talk about this film without talking about that carnival.
That even music
if you forget
as
the
well
entire of the rest of the film, you will remember the carnival and the music from the carnival.
It haunts you at times. It's like a mixture of gods and idols and famous landmark statues and whatnot, just walking down the street, proper ticker-tape parade.
Thing is,
madness.
I loved how accurate it was with regards to the characters taking part in the parade. You know, you got the schoolgirls with the mobile phone heads, you got the salarymen, you got the women carrying the babies and turning into idols with fish.
It's just one of those things, it's just like you can just look at it and just be mesmerised just by that. And it's one of those things that will stick into your mind long, long after the rest, like, you finish the film.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, there are a few things that I would say as surreal as Paprika. Because I think that's what it thrived on, was surrealism.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I think Paprika is such a genius piece of editing. I think it's a work of art when it comes to editing. It's one of those films where... it really should have been put forward for the Oscar for editing, because it's just better than anything else that came out that year.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I mean, I don't know why, but I kind of feel like this is one of those films that always seems to get passed over.
It is, because it was too popular. When it came out in 2005, the problem it had was that everybody that by that point had kind of got the Satoshi Kon bug.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was hugely popular, and because it was popular, it also became hated because of that popularity.
Yeah.
As most popular things do.
Mm-hmm.
It can cause a backlash in and of itself. Even though it was critically well received, even though, you know, the fans absolutely adored it, you walk up to anime fans who watched it back then, and you say to them, what do you think of Paprika? They'll say, it's amazing, it's a wonderful piece of work. But you walk up to anime fans now and say, what do you think of Paprika? They'll go, wasn't my cup of tea. I think it's a bit overrated, stuff like that.
Yeah. See, for me, when I was like talking to people about it, a lot of them were just like, never heard of it.
Yeah.
Never heard of it. It's just like when you mention anime films to people, this was not one that people will bring up. They'll bring up a Ghibli film. They'll bring up Your Name. They might bring up Silent Voice.
If you're lucky.
They'll not bring up Paprika.
Yeah, but again, it just goes to show how little anime fans know of the medium that they claim to be a fan of.
Yeah.
Which we won't get into because it is our 100th episode. So we'll try and keep it nice. But you anime fans really do make it difficult to do that.
Oh, we could talk forever about that. But we'll not. But I mean, even the story, it's not really overly complicated.
No, it's not.
Despite it being Fruit Loops.
Yep.
It's kind of just like a cop detective film, really, just with a bit more flair than usual.
Yep.
One of the things I really did like about it was the main detective in the film, where it's revealed that he once dreamt of having a film career and made his own little film with his friend. And then, unfortunately, his friend passed away and he never really got over it until he kind of realized that he was living his dream day to day by living out the cops and robbers chasing all the time.
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting how they kind of ran with that through the back. It was kind of a bit more in the background to what was going on, but it was still quite an important message towards the end. It was just like, well, you may not be doing what you exactly want to be doing, but you're still doing something very similar to it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was a honestly, the film's just, I can't praise it enough. It's just one of those films you've kind of got to watch and just let it overcome you.
Tucky, what do you think?
I think it's unsettling as hell. In a good way, though. Because it's the animation style, like you see all the transitions, the wipes and whatnot. It's like this one part that I remember. Some bloke puts his hand on her, and his hand goes right under the skin on her face.
Yeah.
And like up and over, and it's like, oh, creepy.
Creepy and terrifying.
It's things like that. I mean, there's another part in the parade where he's sitting, he's surrounded by dolls, and I've got a phobia of like porcelain dolls, and it's
all the doll heads that, you know, speaking at the same time, making noise at the same time.
Yeah,
it's one of the things, though, to capture like just the random like color like you can get in any kind of dream that you could have. Like at any point, it's not so much a nightmare; it's more of like a pageantry of weird. I loved the whole plot of it, and the animation and whatnot. And it was a great movie for me. And that it's been about 4 or 5 years since last I watched it, so it's definitely withstood time.
Yeah, I mean, something I also want to bring up is the colour in the film. I mean,
we
talked about Perfect Blue a few weeks ago, whereas that was quite dark in its colours.
Yeah.
This film is very, very colourful, and you can tell it's very inspired by the carnival itself and how colourful the film is as opposed to some of his other works.
Yep, you're not wrong there.
But yeah, definitely watch it if you get a chance to. I know it's just been re-released by Manga UK, but you can still probably find the old Sony copies in many, many, many HMVs for little more than a fiver, I would imagine.
Yeah. It's worth getting the new version, but if you can't afford it, look for an old version. You'll find it pretty much everywhere. And give it a watch because it's just superb. It's one of the best animated films of all time, I reckon.
Definitely.
Which actually is interesting because on the back of that, I had a couple of suggestions to make for further watching, further viewing, based on Paprika.
Mm-hmm.
So... do you guys have any off the top of your head that you can think of that you'd recommend to watch alongside Paprika, for example?
I mean, personally, I mean, I'm going to probably rewatch Perfect Blue and obviously Tokyo Godfather since Christmas is coming. But I mean, I'm not going to lie, a lot of the stuff like Tatami Galaxy or Night is Short or even Lou Over the Wall would go well with this film as kind of like a very similar, colourful experience.
Yeah. Masaki Yuasa stuff, definitely. Tucky, any from you?
No, just make sure you've got something to eat when watching it. I don't know what it is. You can't sit and not watch it without eating because it's like I say, it's very unsettling, and it's always nice to have something comfortable that you can just like something familiar to remind you that this is reality and that's not.
You actually raise a very good point, Tucky. It does have a habit of making me hungry whenever I watch it.
It's because, like I say, it's very colourful and it's all that. And something to do with the psychology of the colour triggers in the brain, and it'll probably just make you hungry. That's why when they say like people who smoke weed, when they have like all these like colourful hallucinations, that's what triggers the munchies. Lots of colour.
Okay.
Going back to a few months ago now, Food Wars and Restaurant to Another World, those made you hungry, but they were also a very, very colourful series as well. So it makes us wonder if the colour and the sight of the food was making me more hungry.
Possibly it was. Colour does play a big part like that. For me, I had some interesting ones that you could go on with, for just kind of accompanying them. Because I knew one of you were going to say Masaki Yuasa stuff. Eternal Family from 1997, which was, it was only a 28-minute one-shot thing. It basically starts off as a sociological experiment, six different people being brainwashed to think they're a family, and then put in arbitrary situations to see how they react. It was an interesting thought piece, actually. And then there was Kyosugiga, which I thought, in terms of the aesthetic of Paprika, Kyosugiga is the one that I think, because it was an OVA and also a series as well, wasn't brilliant, but in terms of the look, in terms of the atmosphere, I think it was the one that managed to capture kind of the manic atmosphere of Paprika, especially at those times, like during the parade and stuff like that. The one that I think was interesting in terms of the dream and reality thing was King of Thorn, which is another movie, this time from 2009, that a lot of people don't know about. The one that I think is just as disturbing as Paprika, though, but in a different way. And you guys should have heard of this. I'm hoping you have. The Portrait of Little Cosette. Or Le Portrait de Petit Cosette.
I've heard of it.
Oh, Cosette.
Was that Shoujo Cosette?
It's not Shoujo Cosette. It's Cosette, not Shoujo.
Oh, so Le Miserables one.
Kind of, yeah. It's about the art student. He's working at the antique shop and he sees the image of a girl in an antique glass. She's basically a spirit that's been entrapped in the glass by her murderer. And so, yeah, that one's another one that I think it captures the kind of darker atmosphere, darker aesthetic of Paprika. And the one that, just in terms of the psychology aspect and just in terms of just how strange it is, Kuchibaranko, or Welcome to Irabu's Office.
Right.
Kuchibaranko is this, right? Many patients with different problems visit the psychiatric ward of Irabu General Hospital. I think the English title was Trapeze. A trapeze artist suffering from insomnia after suddenly failing his jumps, a gangster afraid of knives and sharp objects, and a businessman who has an erection 24 hours a day. Yeah, they undergo counselling with Dr. Ichiro Irabu, who is the childlike son of the hospital director. His assistant is the sullen-faced sexy nurse, Mayumi. With his mysterious injections and advice that does not make sense, Dr. Irabu confuses his patients, but at the end of his unique treatments, the patients are led to digging further into their souls to find peace of mind. And he basically hides out in a suit where he has a big green mouse head. Yeah, it's actually a funny series if you get around to watching it. Again, one that not a lot of people know about. And obviously,
it's gone along psychological monsters.
Yeah.
Decent one.
Monsters is a good one for the psychological aspect, yeah. Tatami Galaxy, you've mentioned already. You know, we mentioned Masaki Yuasa stuff. Bawaru Penguin Drum.
Oh, yeah, though. Yeah.
That's another one that kind of fits into this whole category. And, you know, Humanity Has Declined, which I really like. I like it. I can't explain why I like it. It's just the whole aesthetic of it and the fact that the little fairy characters are just so totally... They don't understand humans at all. And because they don't understand humans at all, they tend to overdo stuff that seems simple to you or me, but because they don't get it, they overdo it straight away.
Yeah. Another one that was something that we discussed about just before we came on as well, Genius Party.
Yes, Genius Party.
Because that is very weird and wonderful.
Yeah. I think when you get right down to Khan's work as a director and as an editor, I think when you look at his body of work and the influences, I think Genius Party is probably the one that is most reflective of just Satoshi Kon's entire ethos when it came to filmmaking, when it came to making animated features and animated TV shows,
mm-hmm.
which was Anything Goes.
Definitely.
There we go. You know, in memory of Satoshi Kon, we should do that. We should set up the Satoshi Kon Anything Goes School of Filmmaking.
Just make anything you want.
Yeah. What do you think, Tucky?
That sounds like a plan.
You want to do an 18-hour film of a clown flipping a pancake? You go for it, son.
Well, it has to be in black and white.
Yeah, it has to be in black and white. And in slow-mo.
Well, so, how did we get here?
We let the days go by.
Moving onwards from Paprika. Tucky, you have something.
Yes, they can't, it's not quite a spice, it's not quite
Undefeated Barmut Chronicle.
That is going to be...
I wanted to get in on that.
It's I've got to do it now before the end of the show.
Yeah, it feels so much more satisfying saying it like that, doesn't it?
I've been watching Haven't You Heard, I'm Sakamoto. I can't quite do it as smooth as Sakamoto is, but there we go.
This is
a fun little gag anime, very lighthearted with some hit and miss humor. The anime follows the most stylish human alive, who, like every anime character these days, is a high school student.
But the thing is, with him, you get the feeling that he's in there not because he has to be there, but because he just chooses to be there for a while.
Yeah, it's a weird one with how the plot progresses and that. It's like he's got legitimate dreams as well.
Yeah,
guy wants to work for NASA. It's like, yeah.
But the question is, I remember when the manga came out, the main question in the manga was: is he human? Is he an alien? Is that why he wants to join NASA?
Some of the stuff he does is really it's hard to explain. You'd have to watch it to understand the kooky, stylish, over-the-topness that is Sakamoto. Obviously, with him being stylish, he's got a lot of the male student body jealous, and the females rabid.
Until he turns on the charm on the males.
Yeah, he's got charm on everyone, though. That's the thing.
Yeah,
I mean the housewives. This series, it's been out like in subtitled anime. It's been out for ages.
Yeah,
and I believe this is like the DVD of the dubbed version.
Yeah, I think it's been pushed back to next year as a release. Yeah,
it's not until April now. It's now for a while.
Yeah, we've got it well before.
So put this on your to watch list.
Yes.
But the thing is, the series, it's chock a block with meme bait, like overpouring out of all orifices. Like such famous memes that you may have seen is Sakamoto versus a bee.
No, it was a wasp, wasn't it?
Eh?
Wasn't it a wasp?
Wasp.
Was it a wasp?
That's a wasp. I don't know, wasp bee, they're all the same. he has his compass, like the compass which you draw a circle with, not where you navigate with. And he has a little fence and battle with that. That's a gif.
Yeah.
The over-the-top remodeling of a birdhouse.
Yeah, another gif.
Riding a mop bucket down the hall.
See, that was one of the coolest bits as well. I was like, we had those in my secondary school. Why didn't I ever do that?
It was weird, though. It's like he's been haunted by a ghost. He's a mop bucket coming from nowhere. Going to crash into him. He just jumps in and rides it as if nout's happened.
Oh, the bit with the chair is in there, isn't it?
Yeah, where the chair is swiped from underneath him, but rather than fall down, he actually like sits as if the chair was there, like uses his leg muscles instead.
But the way he sits is so elegant, everyone's suddenly distracted by the fact that there's no chair.
It's another gif you'll have seen is the ninja-esque way in which he escapes his mate's Big Mama.
Oh God, yeah, the horny middle-aged woman who has a crush on him.
Yeah, that was a good part of the series. There was another one where he used a fake watch to rent porn for his mates. That was intense because it's like as any bloke who when this is when like video stores where you could rent like 18 plus stuff. Like I've had first hand experience of this, but you know. Your kids, you probably haven't, like, listeners, not you guys.
I was going to say, I'm older than you.
Yeah, but where you risk it, where it's like, oh, do I get this softcore porn? Can I get it at the counter? And, like, these guys, like, Sakamoto helps his friends to rent these movies, and the guy, the store clerk, they think, oh, get in. The store clerk's like a novice. But then the manager steps in, and he's like, he's trying to pull one up on me. He's clearly a kid. And he draws like a fake watch on his arm, and the manager like mistakes it as like a posh Rolex. He's just standing there like, I'm running out of time. I've got to go back to work. And he's like, oh, is he a kid or is he just a horny office worker? That's the Butsumo gif.
Oh, yes. The Butsumo.
The snowball fight. The twirling around biting a bun gif.
Yeah.
The being splashed but having an umbrella while sitting on the toilet.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's these gifs you could like do the whole series in gif form. It was that memeable.
Yeah, but the weird thing is, it was memeable as a manga as well. It's just, it works better as a meme when it's animated. It's
definitely.
All of these are things taken directly from the manga. So I think the most remarkable thing about it is the fact that the creator of the manga sat there and, actually thought in memes.
And it worked in the translation over to anime. It's worked perfectly for it. I mean, it's just like they say, the memes are just tip of the iceberg stuff.
Yeah.
It's wacky, over the top fun. Personal favorite moment was to the episode where he gets invited to be a spare wheel at a karaoke blind date social.
Yes. Yes.
And these guys come to him and he's counting like population density in an area. He's doing that. And they invite him along and say, look, we need a spare person to come because we've got dates with these three women. And they start off and they're like, oh, they're all mature. Like, yes, I want to do this as a job. I want to do this. And they're like, oh, why is your friend wearing a school uniform? It's like, oh, he likes the cosplay. And he, from the onset, you think, oh, well, Sakamoto is actually being outstyled here. And then out of nowhere, he just pulls the arm sacks out. And we I'm watching, I'm thinking, nah, these women aren't going to go for that kind of like shenanigans, but they are.
Does it do the hole in the ground episode? I can't remember.
Yes, where he drops in and they think, oh no, he's fallen
through. He's fallen through to the other side of the world.
Yeah, he's currently in Brazil, Carnival. And it's just, the thing is, the eyewitness reports of seeing him.
Yeah,
when he's walking up these stairs, it's like it looks like he was using an escalator, but when I went, they were just normal stairs. He's just literally gliding up these stairs.
Haven't you heard I'm Sakamoto? It's one of the more surreal comedies to come out of Japan, but it's one of, I think, the animated version. It's very weird because, Aho Girl, I think it is, which came out this year. I'm not a big fan of that because I don't think it works in terms of its comedy as either a manga or an anime series. But Sakamoto, haven't you heard I'm Sakamoto? That definitely does. It's like Tonari no Seki-kun, My Neighbor Seki-kun.
It's definitely had that kind of vibe on it.
And I think that's one of the reasons. I think if you're talking about short and to the point school-based comedies, I think, haven't you heard I'm Sakamoto and My Neighbor Seki-kun are two of the best.
It was right up my street. The Sakamoto, he's kind of like Mr. Bean, but where his charisma points maxed out.
No, I'd say he's kind of the reverse of Mr. Bean.
I don't know. I'd say he's more like Mr. Bean.
No, I'd say he's the complete.
Could you not imagine Sakamoto driving down the street, sitting on an armchair strapped to the top of a Mini, and pulling it off, managing to steer with like a broom or a mop?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's why I think he's the reverse of Mr. Bean, because it wouldn't matter what happened to him, everything he did would work. You know that famous scene of Mr. Bean where he's driving forward and the Robin Reliant's trying to drive backwards and then tips over?
Yeah.
Right. If that was Mr. Bean versus Sakamoto and the Robin Reliant would tip over and then tip over again until it was upright and the Mini would go around and then break down. And Sakamoto wouldn't have a hair out of place, but Mr. Bean's banana would be up his nose.
Oh, my God. How can you top Mr. Bean's banana up his nose?
I don't know.
Oh, I'm going to have to put that for the title, are we? Mr. Bean's banana up his nose.
No.
Too long.
We'll work that out later.
Yes, work it out
the
later.
Thing is, watching through it, it's like a lot of little short clip, like 12 minutes per like section.
Yeah.
But they put them into like the 23, 24-minute format. And it's really good. Rather than watching 12 episodes, you're like watching 26 or so.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the plot, it's there. There is a plot to it. But you rarely recognize it because Sakamoto is kind of like a background character. And the plot development goes on his classmates and the people around him.
Yeah, I think that is one of the genius things about it, though. Sakamoto is kind of the greatest background character in anime, bar none.
He's definitely is. Like, I mean, you'll not find another character like him. Very rare if you do.
And oh no, I think there is one.
There.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think there is one other character who I would put as kind of a background character as well. She's kind of a background protagonist, and I know that's an oxymoron, but she is. It's Gu from The Jungle Was Always Peaceful, then along came Gu.
I can say that. What a little less style, though.
Yeah, she's not. Well, actually, it depends. I think Gu's style is just decidedly evil. Whereas Sakamoto is the good to her evil. There's the fight. There's the anime fight of the century that we need. Sakamoto versus Gu.
Well, this is, let's say, the plot development building up the background characters was a great thing, because you get like a much bigger picture than you would like in your normal like 12-minute like short animes, and it all comes up to the end, and it's fantastic, and just that ending where you find out that Sakamoto's such a good friend that he would drop his trousers for a friend.
Yeah,
you have to watch it to get what I'm talking about, but. I've watched the 12 episodes in the English dub, and the voice acting was up to standard. They did keep the honorifics in, which I know is your bugbear there, Rob.
But yes.
I remember when we were talking about the show actually coming out, and I said, like, J. Michael Tatum will be the voice of Sakamoto, because, you know, it's kind of like J. Michael Tatum's...
Well, it's perfect. Like, he'd be perfect for that role.
Yeah, but it wasn't him. It was Houston Hayes.
Really?
Yeah, and it was a more than capable fit, if I dare not say it, better than probably J. Michael Tatum. And also, you couldn't miss Kabuta, the voice of Kabuta, who's Greg Ayers, who always has that, like, I don't know if you call it like a whiny English voice. It's not like whiny in a bad way, it's just like he's very distinctive.
High-pitched American, whenever, I'd say.
Yeah. Sakamoto. I can't do it. I'm not even going to try. Overall, it's a solid comedy anime. You wouldn't. It's not like Split Your Sides, haha. But you get a decent few chuckles in, and just some of the absurdity of it. It's definitely worth the watch. And just watch it whenever they decide to bring it out over here, because it's been out for a while on subbed, and I think it'll be on one of the streaming channels by now. So, you know, get to watching it.
I'm fairly sure it won an award last year, Crunchyroll, so I'm assuming they've got it.
Yeah, it's Crunchyroll Awards. Nobody cares about Crunchyroll Awards.
This is true.
I'm waiting for Black Clover, the best of 2017. Black Clover wins this. Black Clover wins that.
Oh, God.
That's not going to happen. You know it. It's going to be...
It shouldn't happen.
No,
but
the one that's going to win pretty much everything is Made in Abyss.
Not in the Crunchyroll ones.
If you're a Crunchyroll subscriber, you won't know that exists.
Oh no, no! Wouldn't it be hilarious? Wouldn't it be hilarious though if Black Clover still, if Made in Abyss still won?
It would be. It'd be deserved as well. But it's like, you know for a fact that the Crunchyroll Awards are probably just going to go with whatever one they've been pushing.
Yeah.
Like the way, like, I mean, we've joked about it this like off podcast, off microphone, how Black Clover has been absolutely forced on us.
Yeah, I mean, we will have a full lengthy discussion about Black Clover coming very soon, maybe in the new year, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's one of them things, though, because Crunchyroll, I mean, they've been down with MMO Junkie as well, and I've been watching this season's MMO Junkie anime, and it's now special.
Oh, I really haven't enjoyed it so far.
The thing is, it's like, yeah, so she's unemployed, she's hooked on MMOs. It's like, one, if she's a proper neat, then she's got to live on, like, cup noodles, and there's no way she can afford in-game credit.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, like, little plot holes here and there where it's like, well, as somebody who's addicted to games myself, I can kind of, like, look at it and go, well, no, that's absolute BS.
Yeah.
In places. And the whole, like, oh, well, I'm playing this game, which is networked to the whole world. But look at that. Everyone in my team lives within like a 1 mile radius of where I live.
See, that's not as far fetched as you think.
Really?
Yeah. So I know loads of people
I could go on Overwatch, and I'll tell you what, if I could go on Overwatch and anybody living in the UK alone, that'd be a miracle.
See, one of my friends plays MMOs. He doesn't play Overwatch, though. I think the problem with Overwatch is that there are a lot of people from other countries who play, and because they play, the British audience has started playing, but they're still not enamoured with it. I think if you switch over and use like a different MMO, you'll find a lot more people. One of my mates, him and his mates from his street, you know, these are all next door neighbours. They all join in games together.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like a pre like planned friendship, like party thing already. And I mean, I used to, this is going back when Gaia Online had Zong, if anybody remembers that. And trying to gain a party on there was basically you sat there and you went, anybody up for a party? And the thing is, like, the final level took like 2 to 3 hours of cooperation. And getting a load of random people to randomly cooperate for 2 to 3 hours on the internet back in them days.
Yeah.
we're better networked today, but the online aspect of gaming's the pain in the arse.
Yeah. Anyway, leaving online gaming for this week. So, we've had... what did we have, Mark? What was the first thing we did?
Oh, have I got to do it? It was Undefeated Bahamut Chronicles.
He's not as good as we are at it, is he, Tuggy?
Yeah.
Nemo Echo the other Chronicles!
Yeah. So, yeah, we had that. We had Paprika. What was the last one again?
Haven't you heard? I'm Sakamoto.
Yeah, haven't you heard? I'm Sakamoto. Obviously, Paprika is a definite recommend from us. Sakamoto, is that a recommend from you, Tuggy?
Oh, definitely. You need a laugh. Watch this.
Fantastic. So, we have our final episode of the year next week. As I said, it's the Christmas episode, so do look out for it. All of our shows are available on Audio Booms and iTunes, and we are obviously part of the Geek Show podcast network. So look for us on thegeekshow.co.uk. We have our own Twitter feed now, so we are available on Facebook or Twitter if you look for The Geek Show, or directly look for us on Twitter. What's our Twitter feed, Mark?
It's Keyframe Podcast.
Yes. Look for at Keyframe Podcast, and you're going to have a chat with myself or Mark, or even Tucky.
You might find a wild Tucky on there every now and again.
Exactly.
But I rarely use Twitter because it's pedestal for despots. So, yeah, I'm not calling all our listeners despots, but it's the pedestal for despots.
That it is.
that's a personal opinion. Of course, you can still talk to people who aren't like me.
Man, you might not want to talk to Tucky.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it for this week. We'll see you all next week. Until then, I've been Rob.
I've been Mark.
And I've been the Undefeated Bahamut Chronicle.
I've been Tucky.
he has been the Bahamut formerly known as Tucky. No, because that makes it sound like I'm making a fat joke. I'm sorry, Tucky.
I didn't even take it that way. That's fine.
Right, we'll see you all later.
Bye.